Hey there, you're listening to What the Riff, a podcast that takes you back to riff and reminisce about the days of old. It's that old time rock and roll. We're going to share a few songs off an album of the month from the 60s, 70s, 80s, or 90s, with some individual staff picks and a little more. You're going to hear some well-known favorites, along with a few deeper cuts that'll have you shuffling through your old albums. Maybe you're that person who blurts out an old riff in the middle of a conversation. Or maybe these songs are new to you, and we hope you'll add them to your playlist. In any case, we hope you enjoy the riffs and our riffing about them on What the Riff? Brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors, and also Marbury Creative Group. So enjoy What the Riff?
South African President de Klerk says he will repeal all apartheid laws. Pete Rose is barred from the Baseball Hall of Fame. And the Gulf War started and ended in February 1991. We're What the Riff. Empty spaces. Hi, I'm Wayne.
I'm Rob.
I'm Brian.
I'm Bruce. Today, we're listening to Innuendo by Queen. Freddie Mercury at the time was nearing the end of his battle with AIDS, and the band was putting together this 14th album, which would end up being the last album of all new material with Freddie Mercury, as he would die of AIDS in November. So this song was released as a single in the UK in October of 1991 to support their upcoming Greatest Hits 2 album. And it's just a very poignant song. It's autobiographical.
The show must go on. So he was facing imminent death, but I guess as a band, they wanted to continue. So very poignant.
That's it. Yeah, this was written primarily by Brian May. It is about Freddie Mercury's effort to perform despite his serious illness, which would take his life 10 months after the Innuendo album was released.
Now, what was the illness that he was suffering from?
Yeah, he would die of AIDS, and that was quite controversial at the time. The AIDS was a death sentence, and they were really trying to kind of hide the fact, which was becoming increasingly difficult. In fact, when they were putting this together, Brian May did the vocals on the demo tracks, and so he had to sing falsetto in several parts just because it was too high for him. May didn't know for sure if Freddie would be capable of singing the song because he was so sick. And this was just one of those stories that's just, you know, classic Queen. May went to Mercury and talked to him about it before the recording. And Mercury said, "I'll effin' do it, darling." And he downed a shot of vodka and walked into the studio and pulled it off in a take.
So that's the secret to getting to those high octaves, huh? A shot
vodka.
Of vodka?
A shot of vodka.
Okay.
That's it.
Whoa, that's interesting. That's
I wonder story. If he said it that way too, Bruce.
I think he might. I might have altered a little bit of what he said.
It's such a tragic story, though, with Freddie Mercury. I mean, what a wonderful talent, too.
Oh, yeah. I can't imagine being in the band and doing this song, knowing that you're actually singing about, you know, someone whose death is imminent.
Well, knowing that, I can hear the emotion in the lyrics. I can hear the passion.
I bet. I mean, I'm sure it took them a number of takes to get it. What do you think?
It did. I don't think it took but one take for Freddie Mercury to lay down the vocals.
Well, he's probably pretty exhausted by then. You got to remember that this was
That's a good point.
Very taxing recording. It wasn't long recording issues. And obviously, all the music was done beforehand and ready for him to come in and lay out those vocals.
Right.
After the shot of vodka.
I wonder what would have happened if he'd have taken a shot of bourbon. Would it sound different?
I think he would have a little bit of a southern accent on it.
Then he could have had a scotch and a beer.
So So the band, there were four people in the band. Freddie Mercury is the vocalist that everybody is familiar with. Brian May is the guitarist. Their drummer is Roger Taylor, and their bassist is John Deacon. And this song is more of an epic than a song. This is the first track on the album, and it was the first release in the UK. It's the opening track, and it's the longest Queen song ever released as a single. It's longer than Bohemian Rhapsody by 35 seconds.
All right, 6 minutes and 32 seconds long.
That's right. It started as a jam session between guitarist Brian May, drummer Roger Taylor, and bassist John Deacon. Then Freddie Mercury put together the melody for most of the middle section. And he put together some of the lyrics, which were completed by Taylor.
One thing nice about jam sessions, the Can You Hear Henry Knocking is probably the one you go, oh my goodness, what a great jam session that was recorded and put out. Obviously, there's bootleg albums out there of jam sessions, but it's wonderful to hear those.
That's right. Here's the chorus. We'll keep on trying. It's kind of an existential take. This harkens back to Queen's prog rock roots. And you've got that bolero-esque theme at the beginning. You'll have several movements in this song. So it starts with this bolero-type theme that will repeat itself at the end of the song.
Is bolero like a type of music style?
It's just like Ravel's bolero. There's a similarity.
I remember that from 10.
That's what I was about to say. Bolero. I remember that. I was trying to think if it sounded like 10.
I think that was the first R-rated movie I went to.
Mm.
And that was way before 1991, February.
I can remember that one.
Well, the nice thing about most rock musicians, a lot of rock musicians at this time, they were classically trained. I mean, they started out playing the piano, doing chopsticks and everything else on the piano, and then, you know, branching off to guitar or whatever other instrument. It's interesting that most of the time they were multi-instrument artists.
Definitely. Well, that's definitely the case with Queen. They're just chock-a-block with talent. So now we're moving into a second section. And I want you to listen to these lyrics. This is kind of cool. Through the sorrow, all through our splendor, don't take offense at my innuendo. And that's the only time the word innuendo is used in this entire song. Very similar to Led Zeppelin's Kashmir in that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's funny they named the album after the one word in one song.
Okay, now we're moving into the
classical
flamenco
guitar.
And who is doing that flamenco
solo?
It's got to
be Carlos Santana.
Sounds like it, doesn't it? Not the Who. It's
not Pete
this
Townsend?
Is actually Steve Howe from Yes.
Oh.
So Steve Howe was in this.
Never would have guessed that.
He's the only non-Queen member to have played guitar on a studio recording of a Queen song.
Ooh, how cool. Listen to that.
Definitely has that Latin American flair.
Or Spanish. It's a Spanish guitar, mm-hmm. You know, with the vinyl strings. Okay. And, you know, you're not using a pick, you're using your fingers.
And the lack of fingernails?
Be free with your tempo. Be free.
Who's doing? Is that easy? Cutting a harmony track on this thing? He being Freddie Mercury? Oh, who's doing harmony with him? That's beautiful.
That's a good question. I think Mercury did some of the harmonies, but the entire group was
okay.
were very talented.
They may have just did it digitally and just offset it a little bit so you can get that multiple voice sound.
The wall of sound. They had a lot of meter complexity in this section. You got 5/4, 3/4, 6/4, lots of different times.
2/4. 8.5 by 11
7/16
Bruce is the only true musician in the group here. Brian does a pretty good job, too.
Construction.
Yeah, construction and design.
Now they come back to the main theme from the start.
I always call this big music. You hear the volume.
Oh, sure. It's a pretty dark song. There's a lot of existentialism in this.
Oh, yeah? I don't remember this at all. I'm sure there's one on here I'm going to know.
It's a very good album. A lot of reflection in this.
Well, back to the point we made earlier. They know this is going to be the last album.
That's right.
With that in mind, you can certainly... Well, it makes it a lot easier to catch upon.
There was several other people that died at this time. We had three comedians that had died during this time. They were on TV quite a bit. Nancy Culp, you remember who she
Miss
was?
Miss Jane from the Beverly Hillbillies.
Yeah. And then you had Danny Thomas, Marlo Thomas's dad.
Founder of St. Jude.
Yeah. He had Make Room for Daddy, was a 1950s hit. And then you had George Gobel. He was a comedian, and I only knew him from Hollywood Squares. And
it was a staple. He was like, kind of like Paul Lynn.
All right. So the next one off of this is a little bit of a different take. So this song is called These Are the Days of Our Lives. It was written by Roger Taylor, who was their drummer. And I find it kind of ironic because when he put this together, it's actually a synthesized conga percussion that's used. But when they did the video, he's playing drums. He's just kind of miming it. So... I thought that was ironic that they would do this. And it was released as a single in the U.S. on September 5th, which was Freddie Mercury's 45th birthday.
Wow. And he died 3 months later, I guess.
That's right. In fact...
No, actually 2 months later.
It was in November. You're right. So, yeah. Mm. But the video was recorded at the end of May 1991. And it was the last video that they did that featured Freddie Mercury.
Hmm.
And I think we were talking about AIDS earlier. They were really trying to hide it. And by the time they got to this, it was a little bit... It's difficult to hide the fact that Mercury is sick. So when they put it together, Freddie Mercury, Roger Taylor, and John Deacon were available for the shoot, but Brian May was out of the country, so he was added in later. So if you go back and look at the video, you'll see three of the members of Queen playing together, and then they'll have May kind of on his own, so they've kind of put those together. It was shot in black and white, and that was partly to obscure Mercury's poor health to some extent.
I mean, I guess even his skin color and stuff kind of gave a little bit away.
That's
what
right.
Going on. Yeah. So if you did it black and white, you wouldn't see that.
Yeah. I remember seeing some of the videos, and he was pretty emaciated.
Yeah. Well, by terrible. This time, they're making fewer attempts to hide his illness. So in this video, you can see his receding hairline. He's not wearing a wig. And he's not wearing padding, but he wore padding in some of the videos to hide the weight loss. He's not wearing it there. So you can tell.
Do you think he would have survived if he had it now? I mean, have they figured out?
Oh, yeah, I think he would.
Probably with the cocktail that they have now for the HIV patients. I mean, you got Magic Johnson, who in November of 91 announced that he had HIV, and he's still alive.
That long ago?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
One thing I do remember is just that even though he got smaller, his nose still stayed pretty big.
Well, see, I don't remember. Yeah. The thing I remember about Freddie Mercury's profile, physical profile, is I don't remember the nose so much. I remember his overbite. And, he just, to me, that's the thing that sticks out to me.
Yeah, I remember one of the videos that they did a portrait video of him. And, you know, he was in black and, he had a white background. And, yeah, you could see that overbite. One thing about his nose, they talked about him having a nose job. And he was afraid to get one because he thought it would, hamper his voice.
Well, and I forget which group it was that they reviewed the vocalists for rock bands throughout the history, they said that whoever this group was, that I don't recall who it was, selected Freddie Mercury as the purest voice to be able to hit perfect pitch.
Well, for 20 years, his voice is in rock history. From the 70s and the 80s.
Right.
You heard his voice, you knew it was Queen.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
I'm looking at his profile picture right now, and it is a combination of his nose and his overbite. It might have been like the Sydney Opera House or something, the way it reverberated. I don't know.
Well, you certainly didn't have to be a beautiful visage to be a rock star, did you?
No.
It's something to do with the teeth and the, yeah, it's just, yeah. I'm glad he had a good voice.
Absolutely. Fantastic voice. So there's several that are poignant on this album. This doesn't happen to be one of them.
That's what?
This is called Headlong. This was written by Brian May, the guitarist, and he had originally intended this song to be on his upcoming solo album, Back to the Light, but he let it be a Queen song when he heard Mercury singing the track.
That's pretty cool. And I know this one.
Yeah. This is this first U.S. single. So they released this one in January of 1991 ahead of the album release. But it wasn't released as a single in the U.K. until after 4 months. So it would be their third single. They did Innuendo first, and then they did a song called I'm Going Slightly Mad that is another good song.
What I like about this is a good driving song. You get the top down, if you don't have the cruise control on, you're going to find out you're going to be doing some big speeding there, on the interstate if you're hauling by.
The video was shot in 1990, and it was done about a year before Mercury's death, and it's the last color video shoot that they did. Just a solid, hard charging rock song.
Mm-hmm. Well, some of the happenings of February 1991 in music, you had singer James Brown. He was released from prison.
That's right. I forgot he had been in prison.
Why did he go to prison? Do you remember?
Oh, I forgot.
Was it like tax issue kind of thing?
No, I think it was like pulling a gun on somebody down in Savannah.
Yeah, or Macon or somewhere. Yeah.
Great White had put out their album Hooked. The Fix had Ink. Joni Mitchell put out an album called Night Ride Home. And Tragically Hip had Road Apples. Some of the songs, top hits, CC and the Music Factory had Gonna Make You Sweat. Whitney Houston had All the Man That I Need. Janet Jackson, Love Will Never Do Without You. And Nelson was After the Rain.
Nelson, I remember them. They were the pin-up twins.
And I think because of all those pop songs, the reason why grunge came about.
They were, what was their legacy? Nelson, were they?
They were sons of
Ricky Nelson. Okay, that's what I was thinking.
From Father's Knows Best, and also he was a pop singer back in the early 60s.
They only had about two or three hits at most.
Yeah.
They didn't hang around very long.
Well, once grunge hit, anybody that had any remote look of a glam rock pretty much was pushed aside to the dustbin of history.
The dustbin of history.
Some of those glam rocks could have... some of those glam rocks deserved to be there, though.
Yeah.
Also, movies in that time. L.A. Story... Steve Martin seeing signs from God or somebody off of a freeway sign. I thought it was pretty funny. I enjoyed that movie. Then you had Sleeping with the Enemy. Julia Roberts escapes an abusive husband. King Ralph. It's a cute John Goodman. Anything got John Goodman's in. I'm usually there watching it. It was a pretty good movie. And the big one was Silence of the Lambs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that was a freaky movie.
Dr. Hannibal Lecter. I couldn't get it through the movie. I'm not a big horror movie film nut.
Oh, I love that movie. I think it's creepy.
Unfortunately, there are people out there like that.
So, yep, this was, I like, I'm glad I heard this song on here.
This is
even more interested in the album.
Yeah, it's a solid album, lots of variety, but you'll get that poignancy of, we know we're reaching the end of an era in this one.
It's a nice ending for it. I mean, I enjoy a good rock song, especially from Queen.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Freddie Mercury, for sharing your talent.
Now we're ending our album pick. Now we're looking to our staff picks. And who do we have next to do it?
This is mine. This is a...
Well, Rob, what do you got?
I got a song called Disappear. And it is from NXS, which is a group that I've always appreciated, always enjoyed. This is off of their album, X. I guess it could be 10, but it's the letter X. And this album was released in 1990, but this song hit the top of the charts at number 8 in February of 1991, which is the month we're featuring. So if you hear this, if it makes whatever it makes you think of, that's what was going on in 1991, February.
When did that? You know, I don't know if this is the biggest song ever, but one of my favorites is "Need You Tonight." I just thought that was just a fantastic album, and Michael Hutchins had so much talent, and unfortunately his demons overtook him.
Yep.
And what happened? What happened to Hutchins?
So in 1997, they found him in a hotel in Sydney, Australia. They're an Australian band, so I guess that's his home. Mm-hmm. But he was in a hotel room, and he had asphyxiated himself in some type of sexual self thing that he was getting into. It was really dark, and they found him in the closet of the hotel room, and he certainly had a lot of demons. He had a lot of issues, and the songs that they have a lot of them were kind of dark. And other songs on this album, you remember "Suicide Blonde"?
Yep.
Oh yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's kind of interesting. I think he sung a lot about that kind of.
Well, in interviews too that I recall that I watched him, he was very transparent to a fault. He let his demons out and
let people know he was struggling.
Let people know he was really struggling with it, and it is revealed in some of these lyrics. And then "Suicide Blonde" is kind of along that same line. But what another tragic loss.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy was—he had it all going for him. He had looks, he had the voice, he had the stage presence. But
that's what happens when you get a lot of money when you're young. I mean, unfortunately, time after time, you see people with a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of talent, but unfortunately they're not touring full time. Yeah, exactly. And they have that money, so what do? They end up trying to fill that time with drugs or alcohol, and they end up, unfortunately, some of them fall off, some of them become more creative, some of them actually...
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. it's a bad mix, you know. Their number one hit, the first hit they hit it off with, was called "The One Thing," and it came out in 1983.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So this was about, this is a good bit of distance. They had a
years
pretty
later.
Good career, but I love that song.
Yeah,
and I'd love to feature that album.
I would have thought "Need You Tonight" was the biggest selling single.
I think
time.
They've had a lot of hits. Certainly,
it's interesting. It's 83 though.
Yeah, I remember NXS from the early 80s, and then they just exploded in the late 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. They've done quite a bit, this is a good one. I liked it. It came up and showed up in this month's feature, so I thought it'd be a good one.
Excellent. Yeah, I think that's a good choice. They're very talented group.
I really, when videos were good, if that's such a thing, I really enjoyed NXS in the video world. I just thought their videos were well produced.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
They did well. So we got the next pick here is from Wayne.
Yeah,
what you got, Wayne?
This is going to be
this
Pennywise.
Bro him.
And the song is Bro Him.
Bro is in bro. brother.
Yeah, like your bros, buddy.
And him is in a church song.
Pennywise, any idea where they got that name?
I'm going to guess that either they got it from the Stephen King book, It, or Stephen King got the name from them.
That's a good point. It could have gone either way.
Actually, they got it from Stephen King. This is a punk rock band from Hermosa Beach, California, my home state. They were formed in 1998, and they're actually very popular. They've released several albums, at least 12 by now, not including live albums. This was the second coming of punk rock. The first coming was in the late 70s, with 76, 77 with, The Damn, Television, Sex Pistols. This one was the revival of punk rock. I think it was more of a fight against the poppy songs that were going on at the time that we kind of talked about earlier. And you had Rancid and Blink 182 and Bad Religion, Green Day, The Offspring, and Sublime all kind of hitting that California punk rock sound and exploding out. Obviously, Green Day is probably the most popular.
Did they all start around this time, or were they leftovers from the late 70s?
Most of them started over, because you had X and groups like that were before Dead Kennedys, that were from that earlier era, and they just sort of, the next generation came along, and they liked that song, this little short 3-minute song, just boom, 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 we're going to smash you in your mouth, and this one right here just rocks.
It does. I hate to admit it, but I had never heard of Pennywise. Am I the only person?
No, I have not either.
I didn't hear about him either, Brian?
No.
I didn't know about the group Pennywise, and I couldn't have picked this song out, but now that I hear it, I'm sure that I've heard it, and I believe I've heard it at a stadium or two.
Yeah, well, actually, speaking of which, this is an anthem. This is you're going to sit there and you can hear the background. This is the live version. The regular version is obviously in there, but as a live version, you can kind of hear the background, everybody enjoying it.
Oh, yeah.
And going full tilt.
Yeah, a little
and singing along.
A little behind the scenes there when we were setting these up. I know, Wayne, you mentioned that you wanted, let's make sure we get the live version in there, and it does. It really plays well live. It sounds great.
Well, they had a first release in 91. They re-released it after keeping with the theme. Their bassist had died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. He had issues with alcoholism, and they reissued it and called it a tribute. And like most punk rock songs, it's pretty short, and this is usually the end, except for this is an anthem. And so you kind of keep it going, and sort of like how Peter Frampton on his songs just keep on going and going until it ends. This one just starts picking back up.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what audience cannot sing along with those lyrics?
Well, this is an anthem for many sports teams. You had soccer, you had baseball, you had the Angels and Padres. If they got a home run, they'll play this song.
Yeah, I can see that.
In hockey, the Flyers and Islanders. In football, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Also, the Anaheim Ducks had this as one of them, and after each home goal in the 2005-2006 season, they would play the song. And obviously, you got 15, 20,000 people just doing this. It's electric. And of course, after they won the Stanley Cup in 2007, Pennywise actually played this song live at their victory rally. And the version was extended to cover the time that they walked the red carpet and reach the stage to get the Stanley Cup.
Oh, that's cool.
Is Pennywise still playing?
Yeah, they're still around, and more than likely, a lot of times they were warming up for the groups we talked about earlier. But they will come along and play clubs around the area and be ready and willing to jump in a mosh pit and start banging shoulders with everybody else.
That's a vision I have right now. As kids, just jumping in mosh pits, especially as a
kids. Buddy, I'm the old fart here, and I was in the mosh pit.
I don't see you in a mosh pit today, brother.
No,
sorry.
Not now. I'm really old.
But I mean, as a tempo, you can.
Yeah, I can sense. Sense it accelerating a little bit there.
And I mean, that just to me reeks of a mosh pit. Just.
I've been in spinning mosh pits where two of them are going and spinning against each other.
Oh, gosh.
That's excellent.
I can honestly say I've never participated in a mosh pit.
Heck, my wife's participated in a mosh pit. Don't tell her I said that.
Okay.
And that was Pennywise. Throw him. February 1991.
Going off with the Pennywise.
Is somebody going to say pound foolish? I'm sorry.
Good pick.
Ah, yes.
So we now have another staff pick. It looks like Brian's pick this time. What
Absolutely.
You got, Brian?
This is those damn Yankees. We're going to start out listening to Jack Blades from Night Rangers. He's going to start the song here. But I really want to pick up this time on and let you hear when Tommy Shaw from Styx comes in on the harmonies on the second part of this verse. Both guys are just incredible musicians, incredible singers. Of course, on the guitar, you're going to have Ted Nugent coming in shortly. But listen to this harmony on the second part of this verse. Listen to that.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, it is. It's just, I got chills listening to that. I do all the time, but I mean, these top flight musicians.
It's a super group, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. They got together. They formed in 1989, consisting, of course, as we said, Tommy Shaw of Styx, Jack Blades of Night Ranger, TNT, or Ted Nugent from, you know, the Motor City Man himself. And a gentleman by the name of Michael Corleone, who was unknown at the time as a drummer. But after this stint with the band Yankees, he became the drummer for Lynyrd Skynyrd. So they, you know, they remember.
Set up before or after The Godfather 2?
That's a good question.
Different Corleone, I think.
Yeah, exactly. But no, they remember, of course, for this song, High Enough, but they also were Where You Going Now, but. You know, top 40 hits in the early 1990s. Ron Nevison is a guy who produced this album, and it's a self-titled debut album. Went double platinum in 1990. You can hear Tommy Shaw again. Hitting those high octaves, but I don't know if anybody does it better. I mean, just in harmony or in his melodies. This song hit number three. In 1991, and it was number two on the AOR charts, but it was, like I said, number three on the U.S. Hot 100.
And the reason why grunge music came out. Sorry, this is a little slow for me. But I'm surprised Ted Nugent is like, all right, come on, you know, put some rock in there.
That's a good point.
But you know what, though, Ted Nugent, this is his first top 10 single that he was on.
Oh, that's cool.
But, you know, because you know, all of the other stuff.
Well, I would have thought Stranglehold would have been.
Speaking of Ted, listen to his guitar right there. This is where he really comes into it. Then, of course, he's going to have a solo coming up here in a few moments. But it's hard to believe that it took that long, especially going to Double Live Gonzo and all the other stuff that he did on his, on his own, that this is his first top 10 single. So, speaking of Ted, take it away, Ted. Still too slow for you, Wayne?
Unfortunately, can't edit. just guitar solos.
Yeah. No, but Ted, of course, as we all know, is very politically active. A lot of his concerts have taken on a political tone. My brother-in-law is a big TNT fan and went to a concert where they had pictures of the president at the time that he didn't agree with, and he would shoot an arrow from the stage across the audience.
Of course he did.
In all seriousness, it was a flaming arrow, and he would shoot it up against a target up in the rafters of the Coliseum.
Well, I already have
crowd
on our,
went nuts.
I already have on our future one of Ted's albums when he was with the Amboy Dukes, and we'll talk more about Ted then. But yeah, he's definitely a interesting bird.
Yeah, he's very entertaining, very outspoken. But very well spoken, so it's interesting to hear. I don't agree with all of his points, but when you hear him, he's very articulate, very sharp guy. But it, never a dull moment with the TNT.
Well, that's the interesting thing is he never took drugs.
No.
Or never drank alcohol. He just lived the rock and roll lifestyle with the sex part of the rock and roll.
Yes, he did. He took that part very seriously.
That he did.
But it's just a nice trip down memory lane, and thanks to these wonderful musicians.
Listen to that ending.
No, violins.
All right, our last staff pick today. Bruce, what do you got?
Check these lyrics out. All right. I am constantly looking for an excuse to use that line. The sign said, long-haired, freaky people need not apply.
Well, I know that'll never be used on me.
I have heard that a few times.
If anybody wants to know, Brian's bald.
Yes. It takes me all of 5 minutes to cut all three of my hairs.
So this is Signs by Tesla, and it's a cover of a song from 1971. The original group was called Five Man Electrical Band out of Canada. And the song was originally a B-side in 1970, and then they released it as an A-side in 1971. And then Tesla covered this on an acoustic album that they called Five Man Acoustical Jam. So they were kind of playing off of the Five Man Electrical Band. And it was released in 1990, and it was on the charts in February of 1991.
Now, the original I played quite a bit when I was a DJ in college, so I enjoyed the original song. This one's a good one, good version.
I'm going to go even further than that, though, Wayne. I'm going to go say I like this version better than I do the original. I really do. I just love the acoustic sound. I like.
You think it's because it's live?
I think live
does help so much.
For me, yeah.
I think one of the things that was happening, you had MTV Unplugged. Y'all remember MTV Unplugged?
Some of the best performances I've ever seen.
Yeah, well, I think it kind of going along with the theme, you had kind of the hair bands going on, and MTV Unplugged was a popular show, I think, in part as a reaction to that, kind of like the punk movement. Unplugged would have artists coming out, and they'd perform acoustic versions of their songs or songs without a lot of electronics and things like that.
I wonder how many bands today or groups today that actually could do that.
That's a good question.
But I mean, think about something, but not to get sidetracked, but think about all those wonderful unplugged shows they had with not only with Tesla, but Kiss was reunited.
That's right.
You know, in 95, when they did their unplugged.
That's right. And some
Pearl Jam, when they did theirs, was just fantastic. And all those unplugged shows were just so incredible.
I think one of the things about this is it gave Tesla a chance to kind of show what they could do. Because Tesla had been labeled as a glam rock hair band in the 1980s, and they hated the label. They did not like it. So
it didn't take long. Grunge kind of kicked the hair band to the curb, to the to the dustbin of history.
Well, there is that. But, you know, it's interesting. You can see their talent without the flashy electronica, without the guitar pedals and things like that. They really do a good job.
Absolutely. Thanks for sharing. That's awesome.
Listen.
I wish we did.
Well, we usually end the show with a comedy song or a instrumental, and this time, what do we got this time? Who picked this one?
Bruce did. Listen to the lyrics.
Let's kick it.
It's not what you think, folks.
All right, stop. While I do up my laces, this kind of thing happens every show. Yo, I gotta learn how to tie a bow.
What's your real name?
Robert Van Winkle.
Where did you change?
Nothing rhymes with Winkle. I'm white, and I'm capitalizing.
All right.
That's currently rising. Mix it.
One of the popular songs during this time was In Living Color. The Wayans brothers did this, and this was where Jim Carrey got his start. And in this one, Jim Carrey is basically riffing off of Vanilla Ice, doing "He's white baby."
You know, Damon Wayans was in an interview I saw. I think it's on either Letterman or one of them. And Damon Wayans was asked about Jim Carrey and his start, And Damon Wayans had the funniest response. He goes, Jim Carrey is the white man. It was in the white place at the white time. I'm a little teapot, short and stout.
Juvenile Ice, work it out. The video's hilarious. That's where, it's not on iTunes. It's on YouTube.
Speaking of which, if you guys want to help us out, go to our webpage, go to Amazon, buy whatever. If you want to buy songs or if you want to buy something else to help us out, or go and do the iTunes link and download some of the songs that we talked about today.
Jim Carrey is just such a
white baby.
You got to check this out. Yeah. Go to whattheriff.com and you'll see the songs we featured today as well as a link to this video. That's awesome. All right. Well, let's bring this to a close.
This has been February 1991. I'm Wayne.
I'm Rob.
I'm Brian.
And I'm Bruce.
You're listening to What the Riff.
You've been listening to What the Riff? We hope you enjoyed riffing with us, and we invite you to visit whattheriff.com to find and download the music we had on tap today. You can also contact us and request an album that you'd like us to riff about at whattheriff.com. And if you get a minute, like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter and YouTube. Thanks for listening to What the Riff? Brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. Also, Marbury Creative Group. Tell it better. If necessary, use words.